There it is.
In our study tonight, we want to look over these questions and see if we can make a little progress with them. And then, of course, we've got some other things that we want to talk about in our study tonight. When we use terms, it's important that we know what the terms mean. And, of course, in studying this particular lesson, we've been talking about Bible expediencies. And the word expedient, what does it mean? James?
Well, it aids or helps.
Yes, it's something that aids or helps to do what?
Obey a
command. All right. It's something that aids or facilitates or helps in the accomplishment of God's will.
So it's really, an aid or help that falls within the realm of what's authorized.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It has to be, as we've used the diagram before, it has to be within the circle. Paul said all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. And of course, we read that in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. Now, as we've established, an expedient must first be lawful. How can we know when a thing is lawful? Now, you'll notice we just keep hitting that, don't we? How can we know when something is lawful, Randy?
Because the Scripture will tell us
that. Yes, and how?
Oh, the three ways that it tells us.
Yes?
By direct command or statement, by necessary inference, and by apostolic example.
All right, that's right. Now, once we've established the lawfulness of a thing, does a thing have to be specifically mentioned in order to be lawful? Specifically mentioned?
No.
No, does anything have to be specifically mentioned in order to be lawful? And of course, I want you to explain your answer. Now, sometimes when I get into discussions with things or with people about such things, the question is asked, well, where does the Bible specifically say that? And I say, well, it doesn't. All right, now, if the Bible doesn't specifically say that, can it still say it?
Yeah.
All right, John? All right, well, now that's true, but we're looking now at a different category. We're coming down the ladder.
Well, you're looking for a specific example, like driving a car.
No, I'm not there yet. But what I'm looking at is once we've established something to be lawful, the practice of something to be lawful, yet the authority of that is not seen in specific authority. How else might it be seen?
Generic
authority. Now you're getting to your illustration. And we're going to talk about that some more. But go ahead. It's a good illustration. All right.
But we can't say that we can't do it like the, who is it, the Amish?
Yeah.
Who say they can't drive a car?
Yeah.
It's not a Bible.
Yeah.
But we have a specific example for us to have a job.
All right.
And we need to be able to get to our job.
All right.
Los Angeles, we're not going to walk there.
All right. Now, when we talk about the work of the church, we're going to talk more about that. And I got a question in here about that. Well, maybe I just ought to go on until I get to the question and see how we've answered that. Letter C. Be prepared to show that a thing which is lawful, or unlawful rather, cannot be considered an expedient. If it's unlawful, David, this is your question. All right. That becomes an illustration of our point. But if it's unlawful, remember our circle? All things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. Now, in order for something to be considered an expedient, it's got to be inside that circle. Now, if it's unlawful, it cannot be considered as an expedient. It's outside the circle. Now, these principles that we're talking about, not only do we need to understand the principles, and I don't want you to get confused about some of these things. And I keep asking a lot of these questions, which wind up being the same question. Because I want it to be clear. I want you to learn to think in this vein. Is the practice authorized? How do I do that? Direct statements, approved apostolic examples, and necessary inferences. Now, there are folks who are going to challenge you that that's just some kind of a myth that man made up to interpret the Bible. Now, in our previous studies, our early studies, we've established that that's not so. That's how we communicate with each other, and that's how God communicates with us. And we've offered passage after passage after passage that illustrates God communicating in those ways. And then we've established that once God has communicated the thing that's to be done, then the how of carrying that out might fall within generic authority. Or if the authority is specified, then we don't have any choices. Now, does that make sense to you? Now, we've offered illustration after illustration, and we're going to continue to do that because I want you to thoroughly understand the way to develop Bible authority. Now, be prepared to show that a thing which is unlawful cannot be expedient. David, you've got the circle. If it's outside the circle, then it can't be an expedient. Now, how might it be outside the circle? We talked about worship. We talked about the music that God has commanded. God did not say just simply make music. God said sing. Now, that tells us there are there's something specified here, David. Yes, yeah, that becomes an expedient. That aids and facilitates. That's right. So we want to understand the application of these. Now, when Paul said, someone made a very good comment. I don't remember who it was. David, it might have been you. I just don't recall. Letter D, explain the expression in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12, but I will not be brought under the power of any. I believe you used. Somebody used catfish with. Yeah, go ahead.
Or coffee, if you're addicted to just do without it.
All right. Now, in the context where Paul said this, we find that Paul is talking about the idea of, in similar context, 1 Corinthians 8, 1 Corinthians 10, Romans 14. He's talking about, to illustrate his point, eating meat sacrificed to idols. Now, Lynn, if I like good juicy steaks and I want it to be juicy and I want you to come over to my house and you have a problem with eating meats because you might associate that with the idol's temple, and I said, Lynn, I like eating meat so well and I love good juicy steaks so well, you're going to eat this one. Now, we got a problem, don't we? Now, you see there, what would be ruling me? We're going to have steak. Why? Because that's what I want to have. And I have no regard for what you think about it consciously, where your conscience is. And so I'm going to just, you know, do away with what you think. Well, that's not right. Paul said, I won't be brought under the power. I mean, I won't be dominated by any of those things.
Even without forcing it on, I mean, if she had a problem and you knew that was a problem, just doing it in front of her, I think it also could just
sure. Influence. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You see, I'm determined. I'm going to do it. And I don't care about you. I don't care what you think about it. I don't care what you practice. I'm going to do what I want to do. Well, the problem with that is I've become under the domain of that. It rules over me, not me over it. All right, good. This next question. Give some examples of an unlawful thing that is thought by some to be an expedient. Now, there are all kinds of illustrations of that. Bruce? Oh, the qualifications?
Yes,
some of the qualifications.
Yeah, now today, we're, you know, where they say that a woman can be a deaconess.
Yeah.
Well, there's nowhere in the scripture.
Well, that's true. That would be unlawful then, wouldn't it? That's not lawful because we find the roles described. Joe?
We also have, like, musicals in some places, instrumental music.
All right, now you've suggested two things. One is within the realm of entertainment. The other is an addition to our worship. Both of those are additions to what God has said. So both of them are outside the circle. That's right. Roy?
Would it be unlawful outside of service to have a musical?
No.
A biblical?
No.
Biblical.
Biblical. I don't know what that is. What is a biblical musical?
They show Jesus being born, or not being born, but you know, the
Well, some of that stuff, and I'll categorize it as that, is set up as nothing more than entertainment. It may not be scriptural at all. For example, when Charlton Heston starred in his big role as Moses in the Ten Commandments, well, there was a whole lot of stuff in that that wasn't exactly the way the Bible teaches it. And so Donna fusses at me when I watch such a movie because I sit there and become the critic. She says, watch the movie. I said, I am watching it. Watch it closer than you are. That's the problem with that, you see. But that kind of gets into the realm of entertainment. Now, is it all right to watch the movie? Well, I don't have a problem with watching the movie, as long as you understand this is entertainment. That's all that is.
I think one possibly important aspect of music and worship that we haven't fully addressed is the fact that a lot of times when we say we're not to use instrumental music in worship, a lot of people say, well, you mean in the worship service?
Yeah.
It's in worship to God, period.
I want to talk about that. That is an important thing. And one of the things that we need to talk about relative to that, let me just draw out this illustration because I think it'll be helpful to us to see the point. There was a song leader in Arkansas. He couldn't read music at the congregation where I was preaching. He couldn't read music at all. All he could do is if somebody taught him the song by singing it to him, then he could sing the song. And sometimes not even then, but he was the best song leader we had. Only had the one. And so his daughters were very musically inclined. And sometimes to help him to learn a new song, they would peck it out on the piano at his home. They'd just peck that out where he could get the melody in his mind. And then he could put the words together with it. That's how he would learn, sometimes, these new songs. Now, he invited me to come over to his house one day. And I was over there, and his daughters were there. And they were trying to sing this song. I said, well, I know that song. He said, great, you could help us to learn, or help him to learn it. His daughters knew it. And so they sat down, one of his daughters, at the piano, and said, we'll play along so he can learn the melody. I said, I don't think I'll want to do that. Well, they said, why? And I said, because when I sing these psalms and hymns and spiritual songs that I know and I understand the words to them, I'm worshiping God. It's not just in the assembly where we do that. Well, the song leader told me, he said, well, I don't know this song. He said, I'm just learning it. And so to put the words together with the melody, he said, I'm really not worshiping. I'm just learning the music of it. Now, we had a problem, but it wasn't one that was difficult to resolve. He said to me, because you're singing the song and you understand it, he said, we won't have the piano. He said, but I'm not worshiping. I'm trying to learn the song. Now, here we got a situation. He could no more point a finger at me and say, no, you're not worshiping, any more than I could point a finger at him and say, you're worshiping. Because the last time I checked, that's something we do individually. I don't determine that for you, and you don't determine that for me, you see. Now, if you are worshiping, you've got to set aside the instrument of music wherever you are. Does that make sense?
And I've spoken with people about this before. It says, well, you know, I have to drive down below rather than listen to some, you know, country station or rock station or something. I'm going to turn on the Christian music station. So you're there and you're listening to these so-called Christian songs in which people are worshiping God with the instrument of music. And you're singing along or listening along with them. Now that's somebody once said to me when we were discussing this, it says, you don't worship God by accident.
That's right. You don't.
You worship God because you know that that's what you're doing.
So that's right.
If I'm driving down below, I've got an hour and a half to drive down below, and I'm listening to this so-called Christian music station, I'm singing along with these songs, I'm doing something that's
well, awful. Again, I think the principle that we've talked about, nobody can point a finger at me and tell me that I'm worshiping any more than I can point a finger at them and tell them they're not. So that understanding is something that's individual. And I think some of this stuff, what I've heard, borders on nothing more than entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
That's all in the world it is. But be that as it may, if you are worshiping, Now, I'm not saying if they are worshiping. I'm saying if you are worshiping, then you can't do that. Does that help? Okay. All right. Well, yes, Carolyn. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a well-established principle. When in doubt, don't. That generally works pretty good. It keeps you out of a lot of trouble. Okay? When in doubt, don't. All right. Well, give some examples of unlawful things that is thought by some to be inexpedient. You've offered a lot of illustrations. Yes.
Are you okay? Starbucks inside the service.
Pardon me?
Starbucks inside the church.
End of discussion. I mean, yeah, some think that, yes, you know, we do that, we'll get the people in, so this becomes a lure to get the people in, and if we can get the people in, we can teach them, and so it becomes an expedient to get the people in. No, having such things sponsored by the church is not the work of the church. It's outside the circle. It's unlawful.
Yeah, we've all heard of the so-called joy buses. Brought this out where they'll hide a dollar bill or something under one of the seats because that's an incentive to get more people on the bus.
Oh yeah.
But we see the same thing that Jesus spoke about when he said, well, they're just coming for the food.
Yeah. We might want to note that text, by the way. It's in John chapter 6 where Jesus had fed a multitude, 5,000 men. Some have estimated that when you factor in the women and the children, it may have been something in the neighborhood of 10,000. Who knows? But it was a lot of people. And he fed all of them with the little boy's lunch, 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. And then when they took up the fragments, they had a lot more than they started out with. And so there were some who, in verse 14, saw that and said, well, this must be the Christ. Has to be so. Well, later in that same chapter, Jesus had gone across the Sea of Galilee to the little city called Capernaum, and this multitude has found him over there, and they want him to feed them again. And Jesus rebuked them. He said, you don't follow me because you saw signs, but you follow me because of the loaves and the fishes. Now, how full do you think we could make this building if we offered entertainment, Wendy's hamburgers dropped from a helicopter? You know that was done nearby. If we offered pizza and what we used to call in Kentucky, Coke, which goes all the way from 7-Up to ginger ale, I mean, it's everything's a Coke in Kentucky. But if we offered all of that, how long do you think it'd take for us to fill every pew up? Now, do you think that's an expedient because it would fill every pew? You see, you ventured outside the circle, David. Now you're doing things that God didn't teach us to do as a work of the church. Can't do that. So we can't claim those things as expedients.
The accompanying question is, how quickly will the pews empty when you stop serving?
Well, Jesus pointed that out. And the illustration points that out. After Jesus had rebuked them, they began to disappear. And we find that Jesus asked the apostles, will ye also go away? And Peter was the one who answered and said, to whom shall we go? Thou hast all the hamburgers and french fries we can eat. Is that what he said? You have the words of life. And there's the key. You have something far more important than hamburgers and french fries. And Jesus pointed that out to that multitude. You need to seek me not because I fed you, but you need to seek me because of the words that I teach you. Now, in that context, we find, I guess, what you might call a bit of irony. These people who had first seen Jesus feed the multitudes came away with the conclusion, this must be the Christ. And then just shortly thereafter, in fact, it was the next day, you find them following Jesus because they want the loaves and the fishes. And if you'll follow that context right on down, John chapter 6, you'll notice that those very people who had seen the miracles the day before and had been a part of it, not just the feeding of the 5,000, but in John chapter 6, they saw the blind see. They saw the lame walk. They saw those who couldn't speak begin to speak. Those who couldn't hear begin to hear. They saw all these miracles. That was yesterday. And now today, where did all that go? Where did it go?
It went back and walked somewhere with it.
Yeah. Now, the irony of that, yeah, you pointed out, show us a sign. If you're the Christ, show us a sign. Just makes you shake your head and wonder about folks, you know. Give us some more food, yeah. And they argued, well, Moses fed us. Jesus said, no, Moses didn't feed you. God did that. The manna and the quail, Moses didn't do that. God did. Now, there's the lesson. Sometimes folks think that something is an expedient just because it gets results. And it's not expedient based on that premise. Creed books.
Creed books. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it comes down to, like I said, the statement of faith. You can go check any church's website. They've got a statement of faith.
Yeah, and except ours.
Our statement of faith is 66 books long.
That's right. Yeah.
Won't fit on there.
John? Sprinkling. Yes. Sprinkling. The history on sprinkling. Who can tell me about that? How'd that get started? John? Quite a bit, yeah. But what did he later do? He was later baptized. He got well. So he was later baptized. So that's how it initially started, baptizing a sick man by pouring water on him. Well, now that won't work. That's not expedient. That's outside the circle, David, because we can read what's inside the circle. Baptism is a burial. You can read that in your Bible in John chapter 6. No, that's not right. Romans chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. Okay, you can also see it in Colossians 2.
You can also see in the church history, the sprinkling instrumental music was all condemned by the very churches.
Oh, yeah, in times past.
Yeah, they were condemned.
Yes.
Catholic Church condemned them, Protestant churches.
Yes. Again, I would encourage you all, if you haven't, pick up the track that's in the track rack on instrumental music and worship. It's one of the best I have ever read. I've read a lot of information on instrumental music. I've read a lot of books on instrumental music and worship. But in a concise form, that's one of the best tracts you'll ever read. It gives you not only book, chapter, and verse for what the Bible says, but it gives you the historical perspective of how instrumental music and worship began. And you're right, David. Even early denominational religions taught against instrumental music and worship, and it didn't become accepted even in the Catholic Church until about 666 A.D. So that's important for us to know that. Bruce? We're getting there. We're getting there. Just hold that thought. We're getting there. Give some examples of real expediencies. And then, of course, explain your answer, and we want some book chapters and verse. Go with this, James.
Well, I'm thinking of Hebrews 10:25. There's authority to assemble. That necessitates a place, so there's a church building.
All right. Let's back up and go just a little farther with that. When we read in the text, look at your Bibles, Hebrews chapter 10. One of the things I find that sometimes we do, I'm myself guilty of it, is we quote the verse and we don't look at the verse. Let's look at it. Talk about it together. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, the writer said, "Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking our own assembling together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more, as ye see the day approaching or drawing nigh," some translations give that. Now, in that passage, James, we want to notice, let's keep in mind how authority is established. Direct statements, approved apostolic example, necessary inference. What is authorized in the text, and tell me how?
Well, in verse 24 he says, "Let us consider one another."
All right, go on to verse 25.
"Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves."
What is that? 1, 2, 3, which one is it?
Those are direct statements.
Direct statements. That's right. Direct statements. Consider one another to provoke and to love. How do we do that? Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together. Now that's important. Those are direct statements. So assembling together is authorized by the direct statement of Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25. Now carry that to the next thought, James. You talked about church buildings. We want to know how we can have a church building.
Well, you can't assemble without having a place.
All right, stop right there. Assembling is what's commanded. Here's what's commanded. It is necessarily inferred that you have a place. That's a logical single conclusion. You can't come to any other conclusion. I'd like to see you, Roy, have an assembly without a place. Can you do that? It's not possible. If you have an assembly, it is necessary to have a place. You can't have one without it. Now, place is necessarily inferred. Assembling is commanded. A place is necessarily inferred. Now, carry that to the next level, James. We got a place. You found authority for that. Ball's in your court.
I finished this far before you got my curiosity.
All right, let's keep fishing, Carolyn. All right. Now what? There's choice in place. Yeah. I don't know if that's grammatically correct, but that's the way you'd say that. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm not going to be able to cite specific passages. Right,
you won't. Now, you won't, because these are expediencies. But your passage.
You see examples of people praying and singing in different places.
True. But your passage is Hebrews 10. You want to camp there. We'll look at another one in a moment. But you want to camp there. The command is to assemble. It is necessarily inferred that you have a place. You can't assemble without it. Then to accommodate or to facilitate or to aid in obeying the command, there are expediencies. You might rent a building. You might build a building. You might meet in someone's home. You might meet down by the riverside. You might meet in the synagogue. You might meet in a schoolhouse. You might meet out under a tree. But when you do all of those, you've done nothing more than assemble in a place. Now, do we see that?
There's a difference between aid and modify.
Yes. Now, let's remember that argument. See, we're wanting to trace it right down. Hebrews 10, we've got a command to assemble. It is therefore necessarily inferred that we have a place. Now is where our expediencies come to play. What place are we going to select? Now we have a choice. And we don't have a choice about meeting. We don't have a choice about meeting in a place. But we do have a choice about building a building, renting a building, someone's home. All of those things would be considered as expediencies. Now, if an expediency is something that aids or facilitates in doing what God has commanded. Now, it wouldn't aid or facilitate in doing what God has commanded if you met in a snowstorm up in the northeast out under a tree, would it? So you would find someplace inside. Randy and Carolyn.
I think one of the issues that comes up when it comes to where you're going to assemble is the trappings that come with the building. Do you build a shack, or do you build a modest building, or do you build the Crystal Cathedral?
Those are expediencies, aren't they? Yeah. Now, involved in some of that is foolishness. They're not expedient. Yeah, they might be lawful, but not expedient.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, there's a passage that I want you to look at with me, and that would be in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. I said, James, let's camp on Hebrews 10. But you know, sometimes it's a good idea to have another passage in mind. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, in verse 17, let's look at it. The apostle says, "But in giving you this charge, I praise you not, that you come together, not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and I partly believe it." Let's pause. Paul is talking about their coming together, isn't he? their assembly. They come together in the church. He's not talking about the building. The word church means the called out assembly. We've seen that that term is used even outside the realm of religion. We can see it in Acts the 19th chapter regarding an angry mob in Ephesus. And the term ecclesia, that's translated church in this passage, is also translated assembly in Acts chapter 19. And it's describing not the Lord's people, but it's describing an angry, riotous mob. Jonathan?
Is that verse 20?
I'm sorry, 1 Corinthians 11? 18.
Come together as a church?
Come together as a church, yes, as an assembly.
Are you going to touch on 20 then?
I'm going that way. Okay. Yes, sir. I'm going that way. Pardon me?
Heading south.
Heading south, yes, sir. The point being, the word church is used in this passage to talk about the called out body, those who belong to Christ, in the assembled capacity. Now what we want to see is that the word church is used a number of ways in the Bible. It's used to talk about an angry mob of people in Acts 19. It's used in Acts 19 to talk about a judicial body, a court. It's also used in Matthew the 16th chapter in verse 18 when Jesus says, "Upon this rock I will build my church." We may call the word church in that passage the called out body in the distributive sense. They're scattered out all over the world, those who belong to Christ. We also see the word church used in the local sense of the called out body. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 2, the letter is written to the church of God, which is in Corinth. Now that's describing the called out body of people in that local community. But here we see the word church used to reference their assembled capacity. They're come together in one place. So we see it used in the distributive sense, the church universal. To some degree, we see it in a distributive sense in a local church, as the church written in Corinth and the epistles, not just in their assembled capacity. They're still a part of the church when they're at home, and you are too, when you go over to your house and you go to yours. We're still making up the church in Lancaster. But then again, tonight we're come together in the church. We're assembled. Now that's what they were doing in 1 Corinthians 11. They were assembled. And in verse 18, as it continues, he says, "I hear that divisions exist among you, and I partly believe it. For there must be also factions among you, that they that are approved may be made manifest among you. When therefore ye assemble yourselves together, it is not possible to eat the Lord's Supper." Now let's notice that, Jonathan. That's the point you were making. We notice, or I think it was, in verse 18, they were come together in the church. They're in their assembled capacity. And we know that because of what verse 20 says. When you come together or you assemble yourselves together, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, why not? He says, "For in your eating, each one taketh before other his own supper, and one is hungry and another is drunken." Now, look at verse 22. "What, have ye not houses to eat and drink in?" Now, that's an interesting question to me for this reason. Where were they meeting? They weren't meeting in somebody's house, were they? Now, I don't know where they were meeting, but he makes a distinction here between their assembly and where it was, contrasting that to their homes. Now, that's helpful to me because it suggests to us, James, from Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, we must assemble. That's a command. It is necessarily inferred that we have a place. But here we see that the place where they met was obviously some kind of a public place. It wasn't in somebody's home. Because the distinction is, what? Have you not houses to do this in? Now you'll notice further in this same context, he says in verse 34, "If any man is hungry, let him eat at home, that your coming together be not unto judgment, and the rest I will set in order whensoever I come." Now he's telling us something. He's telling us that the church at Corinth assembled. And he's also telling us that where they assembled was not in somebody's home. Now, I don't know where it was, and you don't either. But we know that they had houses to do this in, and this is set distinct from that. Randy and Roy and Carolyn and Bruce. Don't let me forget. Randy. It does, but I'm not there yet. We're going there. Just hold that thought. Got a whole lesson on that. In fact, we got some questions on this about. But you're right. He's talking about recreational, entertainment things, and that's not in the work of the church. Here we see that that's a work of the home. You've got houses to do that in, and we see that distinction. Roy, good point, Randy. You got it. Now, that doesn't preclude you worshiping in your home. You can do that as a family or such things. But here is where we come together in the assembly, you see. And right, this is not the place for snacks. If you want that, you can take that to the lake while you're fishing, you see. All right, Carolyn?
Would Acts 29 be an apostolic example of a meeting in a building?
Acts chapter 20? Verse 9. I don't recall offhand what that said. Yeah. Now, I've got a whole series or a whole lesson on when is a Bible example binding. Now, here, being as you brought that up, we can just kind of throw this out, kind of whet your appetite a little for when we get to this lesson. Is it necessary then, in order to meet the command of God to assemble, that we meet in the third story of a building?
This would be an example of that it's lawful.
All right, that's right.
Because we have him meeting with the women by the river.
All right. So. All right, that's right. So this would be a lawful place, but it's not binding for us to always have to meet in a third story room that has a window for somebody to fall out of.
It's lawful, but it's not always expedient.
That's right, that's right.
Somebody have to go to sleep.
Somebody have to go to sleep, yeah. You wait a minute, Randy.
That's a good point. Some people would hang on that one.
Yeah.
It must be for the third story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believe in one cup.
Well,
I'll drink from one cup.
This is right. And you see the application of the things that we're trying to establish. If we understand the nature of Bible authority, then we can learn how to apply it to some of these things. But when somebody doesn't understand how to apply these things, even though they may have the principles down, but they're not certain of how to apply them, they come up with conclusions like the illustration you offered that creates division in the body of Christ. Now, there's two extremes to this thing. Sometimes folks believe that the only way that authority can be established is it must be specified. Well, that's not true. Then on the other hand, the other extreme, there are those who say, well, we do a lot of things without divine authority, so we can do what we want to. Neither one of those are right. Neither are right. I think I left somebody out. Did I get everybody? Bruce.
Can you read verse 20 again?
Verse 20 of 1 Corinthians 11?
Yeah.
Okay. I can do that. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 20. I'm reading from the American Standard. It says, when therefore ye assemble yourselves together, it is not possible to eat the Lord's Supper.
Because what King James and the other New King James mentions when you come together, when you come together, therein into one place.
Yeah, okay.
So
that's right.
More specific.
Yeah. Well, he says, when you assemble yourselves together. You're right. You're right. That's good. Now, while we're on this passage, we're never going to get through these questions because I keep getting on these tangents. But I want you to notice in verse 20 and 21, he says it's not possible for you to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, I want you to look at that, Penny. Verse 21, for in your eating, each one taketh before other his own supper. Now, you see what the distinction? You can't eat the Lord's Supper because you've turned it into your own. One is hungry, and another is filled. You see the difference? It's not the Lord's Supper anymore. You've made it your own. Well, now the Lord's Supper consists of the elements. It consists of a number of things. But you don't have all those things present when you go home and eat supper, do you? You see the difference in going home and eating supper and eating the Lord's Supper.
Just to throw it in because you're on the same subject, but we do have authorization to have a church in someone's home. Priscilla and Aquila have a church in their home.
Yeah, there are multiple examples of that. That's right. Yeah, we may meet, but that becomes an expedient, you see. It might not be expedient, though it would be lawful, if we had 200 people and we're going to meet in your home. You see, that wouldn't be expedient. All right, Richard, comment.
And just for a detailed answer here, in verse 20, as the American Standard Version says, when therefore ye assemble yourselves together, this assemble here is not the word ecclesia. This is from a root that's very similar to synagogue.
Okay.
The synagogue means something like an assembly.
Yeah.
And so it's simply the generic word for assemble. It's not ecclesia. Yeah.
But it is in verse 18, is it not? In verse 18.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was. Okay. I said that. I thought that was correct. I didn't want to let the ball drop. All right. You're good on these. Give some examples of expediency and explain how each is authorized. Does everybody understand how a church building is authorized? Start down the ladder. Direct statements. Hebrews 10. Necessary inference. Got to have a place. Now we're to the area of expediencies. What place will we select? That's how divine authority is established for a church building or meeting under a tree or meeting in Randy's house. All right, Randy?
Just wanted to...
Oh, we're not out of time.
We've got 5 more minutes left.
I was having a conversation with Daniel Peter.
He's right back there, yeah.
And he was asking how do we show authorization for things within the building, like the air conditioning system.
All right. All right. Well, we're going to have to talk about some of that. And let me just jump ahead here a little bit. We've got several questions to answer. But there's your question. Number 10. Is it... Whoa! There we go. Is it scriptural to have electric lights, air conditioning, flush toilets, and water fountains in our building? Now, let's answer the question.
Well, not water.
Is it? We've asked the question, and we need to answer it with divine authority.
Now, the fact of the matter is that these, even though they're in the realm of expediency, also come into the realm of good stewardship of what the Lord has given us. And so we see that we're required to essentially to account for Lord, for what we do with what He's given us.
Well, that's true. Of course, that kind of enters into another realm of things, but that's true.
Well, the first thing I can think of is that if you're going to have a building, in order for it to be lawful within the city and the county and the state, you have to abide by certain laws.
This is true. Okay, this is true.
If you're going to have a building, you have to have a parking lot so big.
Okay.
You have to have restroom facilities.
All right. That's true. We're under obligation to Romans 13 to do what the city ordinances require.
That's why we have a business license.
Yeah, well, it's back there. We've got one up front that's outdated, but there's a new one back here. But let's suppose we're meeting out in the country in Barrawala, Kentucky. Let's talk about the... Can we have electric lights out there? Can we have air conditioning out there? Flushy toilets or water fountains?
Not very
electricity in Kentucky. John, I don't say this often, but touche. That was good. That was good. Yes, we do. No, that's so far back out in the sticks we had to pipe in the sunshine. No, electric lights. We want to establish divine authority for this. Are they right or wrong? We've got electric lights. We've got air conditioning and heating. Pardon me?
I don't hear electricity in the Bible.
Ah! Now you're going right down the rabbit path I want you to talk about. No, we don't read about these things specifically in the Bible. But what do we read? James, let's do it again.
Direct statements followed by
Get that third one. Yeah, well, these three, but I'm looking at Hebrews 10. Let's come down the ladder. We must assemble. How do we know it? Direct statement. Can't assemble without a place. Necessarily inferred. Now we've got expediencies about what kind of place we do provide. Whether it's in Randy's home, out under the trees, or in Lynn's home, or Jonathan's apartment, we've got to make some selections here. We must assemble. Now, where we assemble, these things, electric lights, air conditioning, flush toilets, water fountains, such things. Let's just suppose we're assembled as we are tonight, and we don't have electric lights. And I call on Randy to read Psalms 119. Well, we got to have a light. Now, wait a minute, Bruce. If they're not electric lights, we might use candle light. But we still got a light. Got to have light. Now, let's suppose we live in the desert where it gets to be about 116 on a good warm day. And we get everybody inside this building and we got 200 people. Pardon me? What'd she say?
With candles.
With candles. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, are we going to have to provide some accommodation for that assembly? Got to have water, all right. We might need some air conditioning to accommodate that large of crowd. What else might we need? We might need some restrooms, yeah. Yeah. Well, this is true. What I'm suggesting is, what's commanded, James, to assemble, it's necessarily inferred that we have a place. Some of these expediencies might come to play in decisions regarding the circumstance of where we assemble. These are expediencies. Now, Bruce, you kind of hinted on this a while ago. Though we can have water fountains and restrooms because we must have that which facilitates the assembly. You can't have an assembly without the things necessary for the assembly. Can you take the same water fountain and put it on the edge of a basketball court that the church has built? Well, now why? We can have water fountains. You mean to tell me we can have the same water fountain in the church building to facilitate the assembling to worship, but we can't put it on the edge of a basketball court that the church has built? Now, we've changed the work, haven't we? Now, somebody looks at me and says, boy, that sure is picky. Is it? Good point. I need to make this point in light of what you've said. Give me a minute. I've held meetings a number of times up in Medford, Oregon. They meet in an old log building. It's really a large building. They only use just a small portion of it to meet. But they are charged by the hour. The Grange Hall, it's called. There's a lot of those up in the Northwest, I'm told. It's an agricultural group that have this facility, and they have meetings in the facility. And the Lord's church there is privileged to rent that thing for almost nothing per hour. Now, they could not build a building for what they get to use that for. It's expedient to them to rent that. Daniel? Good question. I've had that argument made. In John chapter 6, the purpose of the miracles that Jesus performed. Well, let's go a little farther. John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. The text says, many other signs therefore did Jesus in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have faith in Him, or might have life in His name. The miracles that Jesus performed, even including the feeding of the 5,000, was to show that He was the Christ. Now we know that's so. Let's go back to the feeding of the 5,000 in John chapter 6 and read what verse 14 tells us. When they saw that he had fed the multitudes with 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. They said, this must be the Christ. Now what did they see? They saw the miracle, the sign. Now Jesus rebuked them for continuing to seek him simply because he fed them. Does that answer it? Okay. Any other questions before we are forced to quit? Yes, Roy?
So on that note, it wouldn't be unlawful for on the side brethren to get together and collect a fund as long as it didn't take away from the church's work to help the homeless and whatnot.
Well, no. Nothing wrong with that. No.
Individually.
Yeah. Individually. We're going to talk about that. I've got a whole lesson on the individual and the church, the distinction between the two. But that's right. Let's suppose you and I want to get together and go play basketball. And we want to get a bunch of the fellows together and go play basketball. And we know that over here at the school, they have a gym where we can go play basketball. But they rent the gym. Can you and I and Randy and Jonathan and James just all throw into a hat of money and say, we got the money now to rent the building. So us fellows are going to go over and play basketball. Now, did the church go play basketball? No. Church didn't rent the facility. Church didn't do that. Though we are members, we're acting individually. The church didn't have a thing in the world to do with renting the facility. We did. Does that make sense? Okay. Good deal. All right. We'll have to stop there.